welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Well, folks, it is now or never. I believe more and more people are starting to wake up to the idea that we don't have a lot of time. You know, for years, I used to just look out my window when I started my show and just basically report to the people. I see no sign that the federal government is going to relinquish any of our liberties, that they may allow us temporary use of them for this point in time or that point in time. But as soon as they put handcuffs, as soon as they put shackles on any of your liberties, that's it. They've assumed control, and they never let go. This is one of those reasons why I just go through and emphasize how important it is that we do things right when we undo government tyranny. You got to be very clear here, folks. At least I got to be very clear that we make hasty decisions and just saying, okay, we'll make a compromise. We can't make compromises. We can't afford any more compromises. But I don't want to go into a long monologue setting up the show because there's a lot of stuff I want to tell you. And so, as you know, as I've already stated, it is now or never. Thank you for listening. I don't necessarily say that enough. And this episode, this show right here, is the 990th episode of Reclaiming the Republic. And with that, that means that we're coming close to our 1,000th. So we're basically 2 weeks away. Next Friday should be our 995th. And then in 2 weeks, on the 20th, interesting, the 20th of May, that's almost when the Constitutional Convention convened. As a matter of fact, I would basically say that many of the framers heading to the Constitutional Convention were already on their way. Madison and many of them that had to, because it took, it's not like they got in their car or they took a plane. It took them a week, weeks to get from Boston down to New York, down to Philadelphia. I mean, we're talking horseback ride. I mean, just imagine if you've ever ridden a horse, how long it takes to get from one point to just to go to 60 miles is a day. So these men who were getting ready to, you know, redo or actually fix the Articles of Confederation in such a way that would save the Republic and save the Union. Anyway, we've got a bunch of interviews coming up, and today we're going to be playing my interview with Tom James out of Wyoming. He's Senator Tom James. We're going to give you little insights on him, what he's done, what he's had to put up with, and why you need to support him and the rest of the champions in Wyoming. I would hate to say if I had priorities at this point. If you only had $1,000 to spread around in the election, I would basically beg you to put that money in Wyoming. Because right now, one, we can do that because we haven't locked it down by making all elections local. That Soros wants to be able to buy every election as it is. He's going to actually pump all the money he's going to. But if we focus on one specific state, the state that's the closest, I mean, we actually had legislation this year. We had legislation that was introducing Republic review. I mean, come on, folks. We're that close. Come on, close. We're that, folks. Sometimes I get dyslexic. Anywho, we also have Patricia Kent's with the IAP interview. That'll be coming up on Monday. And as we go through these constitutional issues for campaigns and getting us closer to, you know, restoring our constitutional rights, as we get closer to and as we actually hit the common law point, in other words, what does it take to get common law restored and what do we have to do? With my conversation with Paul Nally, we're going to introduce Paul Nally to you. That should be this coming week because we're just a few topics away from that. And in addition, I had a good conversation with a J. Gregory Howard yesterday talking about the election and how he could actually, I believe, there's no doubt in my mind, I believe he could actually take control of the election as far as putting wind in his sails and actually take control of the narrative in his particular race. And as a matter of fact, in most of the races, if he created this alliance amongst all these other campaigns that are challenging the RINOs for Congress in Georgia. So it was a very interesting conversation. And so we're hoping to actually get him on. They're only like 3 weeks away from their primary. The primary season is upon us, folks. And because we've been kind of floating on our back, lackluster, at least some people, just doesn't seem to have fathomed. Some people just have not been able to understand just how important the election season is. And we've missed the boat. Because you haven't thrown your hat into the ring, then we missed the boat. We need you. We need everybody. GR can't run for every position. Therefore, the best thing for GR to do is to help everybody run for all these different positions. And that's exactly what I'm doing. We plan on having probably Dan Scadam on. We plan on having a lot of other people, Robert Wharf, all sorts of people that are actually running for office in either the general election, their primaries, and what have you. And all of these are critical. So once we get to the primaries, which the primary for Wyoming, by the way, because the primary really closes the deal almost on every race. So the primary in Wyoming is at the end of, or the third week, I think, of August. After that, we have some very key general races that there are, you know, just a Democrat that is the incumbent, and we've got either a Republican or a Constitution Party or whatever in basically challenging and going the distance. So it's really, really important that we actually, you know, so everybody understands between now and November. And it's going to get tough. If all of a sudden the cost of food goes up and everything else, what are we going to do? We're going to let the billionaires buy our elections? We have to figure out ways we can actually help people get involved. The best way to do this is if you can start collecting information and are working with, let's just say you don't have any money. Let's just say right now you just can't afford a penny. Contact these organizations to say, hey, what can I do? I live out of state, and what can I do? Can I make phone calls for you? Can I, you know, do any types of, you know, solicitations or calling and begging people to support you? What can we do? And you'd be surprised that there are ways, like phone calls. It just makes me think back in the 2016 election, how precisely the phone calls from Riverside County really swung that election. We don't have a lot of time, and as I look at it, I've got less than a minute. We're going to be going straight into the interview, and then when we come back, we'll try to do some feedback Friday. As you know, we have these really important sponsors I want to do, so direct sponsorships. TimberNation.com is one, and Add Local. So go, and we advertise on, we have promos for Ad Local, but go check out TimberNation.com. Our comment line, 425-270-5416, and the content is moving forward. We have that script. We want to get into the details when we come back from the interview with Tom James, Senator Tom James, because what we want to do is we want to go into some of these key things of where you can get the script, how you can start injecting into these congressional races, and how you can start injecting. Because bottom line, folks, if you start demanding and you start making an issue, and that may be one of the best ways you can help some of these people that are actually championing the removal of the Biden administration in these congressional races, actually start injecting in the forums, go into Facebook and join these Facebook groups that are, you know, in these other states where these races are really critical. We'll talk more about it. But when we come back, right after this outgo, we're going to have Senator Tom James and my conversation with him. Please stand by.
Okay, folks, we have, as promised, Senator Tom James from the Wyoming State Legislature. And what I want to do is I want you to understand what this man has gone through, what he's doing. And actually, he's one of the people that really brings transparency to the Wyoming government. You want people in your state legislature to do what he's doing in identifying who votes and how they vote and so forth. And as a matter of fact, he's shared his spreadsheets with me. This guy is the epitome of a public servant, and it's not like he's trying to line his pockets with gold or anything else. He is a man that is truly doing public service. And even more importantly, he supports the Constitution. And so what I'd like to do is introduce you to Senator Thomas James, or Tom James. Hey, Tom, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, J.R. I appreciate it.
Now, one of the things that I constantly hammer, you know, to the public in getting constitutional legislators and getting people into office that understand their oath of office and so forth, they don't understand what you have to deal with. So if you could give us a few examples of how and what you have to deal with rhinos, with people that have no regard for the Constitution, the rule of law, or anything else. And if you want to get into, you know, whatever level of details, I think it's great, because I think people need to start understanding that even in the dark red states, you are encumbered. You are completely constrained from doing what you need to do because these rhinos are in office and they're laughing. I just see them as basically flaunting that they control the narrative, and we have to change that. Is that not correct?
Absolutely it is. And, you know, if anyone has any questions afterwards, they're more than welcome to contact me for any further detail. I always make sure I have evidence of everything that I always talk about. So
right.
If anyone has any questions, I'm always open for contact.
So, as a matter of fact, I think you even try to videotape and you try to pull up the actual facts. But let's get into some examples. I mean, so out of the course of 4 years, because you're coming up for reelection, to folks, we need to get Senator James some financial help. So he's one of those people that I'm highly endorsing. If you can send money, and we'll get that information to you at the end of this, and the website will be on my website as well, and I'll tell you where that is. And so bottom line, let's get into the meat of this discussion. Some of the things that you've had to suffer or endure over the case of the 4 years, can you give us some highlights or some issues?
Absolutely. So fiscal irresponsibility and cronyism, abuse of power and suppression of the people's voice, some of them. We have senators being removed from committees with no evidence because a lobbyist wrote a complaint, and the members of leadership do not like him. And then the other members of the Senate are too weak to speak up and say no. I mean, you have members of the House that allow a member to move out of his own district and then gerrymander his way back in and allow him to chair the committee that handles redistricting, and don't even create a committee to investigate if he is in his district alongside law enforcement. You have chairmen of committees that limit the speech of the public, but not lobbyists or government entities. You have assaults that happen on the floor of the Senate by members of leadership to other members, and nothing happens. You have bills that die because members of leadership don't like the bringer of the bill. There are almost daily conflicts of interest, votes that happen which violate their oath of office and the Constitution, but they justify it because they made a rule that say it's okay. And just so everyone knows, rules do not override the Constitution. And if you want to see how you're being represented, then you can look on my website, which is Tom James for Wyoming. That's FOR.com. And here you'll find the legislators' voting record every year they have been in office. And you'll also find their committee votes and their financial disclosures. Now, this information is not offered anywhere else that I'm aware of on one website.
Right. So let me inject. Forgive me. But folks, I know that those of you who are not in Wyoming go, well, you know, why is this important? When you have a representative at the state level who has oversight over the U.S. Constitution and is calling for compliance of the Constitution, and he's being encumbered in his own House or in his own Senate,
from being able to do these things and actually being attacked. And we'll get into that, the body slam. But folks, you have to understand that when one person anywhere in this republic is doing this and demanding compliance of the Constitution, they're actually arguing for everybody in this republic, even in your state, to, you know, to get government under control and into compliance. That means that they're fighting and advocating for the entire republic, even though it may be a state argument and issue. When one state rises up and says, we're taking on the federal government, we're calling the federal government out for all of these things, or more importantly, before they actually take that position and calling out the federal government, what they actually have to do, and that's a part of this review committee and Republic Review, they have to appeal to all the other states. You need somebody outside your state to appeal to your state to do the right thing. This is going to happen from Wyoming. This is why I emphasize the financial support to all of these positions that we're going to be endorsing in this coming 2022 campaign. I just want to emphasize this, and so forgive me for helping my listeners understand why Wyoming is so important and why your race and all of these races in removing rhinos is going to be critical. So with that, let's talk about that body slam.
Well, a couple more things.
Go ahead.
Yeah. These people make all kinds of promises during their campaigns. And, you know, I'd like to ask this. How many of them actually follow through with all their promises, with even half of their promises? Not many that I can think of. And, you know, if people wish to make a difference in their against corruption and hold these people accountable in Wyoming, at least, I mean, who do not honor the role in a servant leadership, you can visit my website and learn how your senator and representative vote and learn how they've been representing you. And if you'd like to, another thing that I do that I'm not aware of anyone else does is I also run a nonprofit where I teach people how to understand Wyoming politics. I teach them how to find, read, and understand legislation, statutes, the Constitution, how the budget works, and a lot more, and anything else that they want to learn about politics in Wyoming. It's called Wyoming Voter Education, and it's at wyomingvotereducation.com.
Okay.
And yeah, that's pretty much all I have on that.
Again, the epitome, folks, of a public servant. So isn't it against the law to strike somebody? Isn't it against the law to assault somebody? Whether that be verbally, that's one form of law, or actually hitting somebody would be battery. And so
yes.
Okay, so when that happens actually on the floor or within the state house, within the halls of government, how come those laws aren't being enforced?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And when you have video evidence of it and you present that to law enforcement and they choose not to do anything about it, it kind of makes you wonder when it's rules for thee but not for me type situation.
Right. So the question I have is
wonder.
So does law enforcement have the ability to try whether a crime has been committed? In other words, are they magistrates and they determine that a crime hasn't been committed? Or are they supposed to actually execute and enforce the law that obviously somebody was stricken here? This needs to go to an inquiry where there is a body, where due process, because the person that was harmed has a right to due process.
Correct.
And so why is it that law enforcement is actually taking away the civil rights of due process that's guaranteed not only in the Bill of Rights, but even under the 14th Amendment?
You know, I asked that question and they didn't really have an answer for me. They just kind of shrugged their shoulders and swept it underneath the rug, kind of like they do with a lot of stuff with leadership.
Well, and so what they're trying to do is they say, well, because it was a body check, that we can't prove that his intent. So the bottom line is, and just to get into the context, the specific context, folks, it's Senator Driscoll, right? That's his name?
Yes.
Senator Driscoll claims that his hip went out. I know a little bit of the facts on this. Senator Driscoll claims his hip went out and he fell into, or basically had no control and caused harm to Senator James. basically, you know, running into him. And kind of like you see all the time how people do that to make it seem like, oh, it was an accident, when you know it wasn't. But the question is, if Senator James now invokes this protection that he has a hip problem, where's his cane and why is he not remedying this problem? Because this should have actually been investigated. One, on the medical side, is this a legitimate medical claim or is he actually obfuscating the fact that he actually attacked somebody? If there's evidence, then the question is he still fit to be a senator? Because if this is going to happen, he has no business being in the House or actually in the Senate, being able to run into people because his hip's going out. Even though this has only happened once in his entire career, it should have never happened.
Correct.
And so I'm just saying, folks, that when you see this type of stuff, it all of a sudden starts lending to this concept that we honestly have the leadership that is controlling the state house. Because really everything is determined on whether the state leadership, the whip and what have you, want to enforce the rules and the laws. And they don't. Is that not correct?
Only when it benefits them.
There you go. Okay. And so what we have to do, because I'm constantly educating people that our justice system is perfect when it's blind. In other words, when it doesn't consider who's in front of them, what they are, their race, creed, gender, or anything, or their political affiliation. When it is blind and it actually can deliver true justice. It's the same thing with our government. Our government is perfect when it is blind, when it's not creating laws that protect one class, one group, or what have you, that it provides equal protection under the law. And so this is just one little highlight. It's a recent highlight in your career, but there have been, you know, this is just something that's happened with you, but there's been all these other cases where there's been people drunk and disorderly during sessions.
Yep.
And the real problem, it comes down to we have to demand the highest level of integrity. And these guys are, I can't believe the Wyomingites, the voters of Wyoming really think that this exemplifies the type of government that they want. I don't think it does.
I don't believe it does either.
And so how is it that we can help change that paradigm? Now, I've already kind of talked to, and I promote the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle on my show. And I'm not sure, have you been on the Wyoming Conservative Chronicle or been interviewed by them yet?
I have been interviewed. I should be out here in the next month or so.
Okay. Well, good. But getting the word out is critical in having that, because how much liberal, or I should say, how much real conservative or constitutional media exists in Wyoming?
Few, if any.
Yeah, that's right. And this is how this is so important. This is why we actually have to, you know, put aside, you know, these our standard paradigms of the status quo, folks. We need to help get the right people into Congress and out into Congress, into the state legislators specifically. I was going to say this, into the Senate of Wyoming. And so let me ask you this, Senator James. What is, because when I looked at this, and this was a few years ago, it seems to me that the political races in Wyoming are one of the cheapest races there are. Is that not correct? I mean, in California, I think to become a senator, a person has to spend somewhere in the magnitude of a couple million dollars to become a U.S. senator, a senator in the state of California.
I'm not sure what California is, but I know my race wasn't that expensive.
Right. And so when I did the research in 2018, it looked like a typical House race was somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000, a House race. And a Senate race was maybe double that. You know, 10 to 20. And so that's very reasonable. And when I look at the outcome, or I should say, when I look at the voter participation in both the primary and I look at the voter participation in the general election, I'm going to say that you were probably elected by 10,000 people or less.
Yeah, I was around there. Yeah.
Okay. So it's basically almost like $2-3 a vote. You know, if we quantified it down to that. Now, there's millions of people. There are millions of Republicans and millions of constitutional lovers in the United States.
And when I say millions, I can easily say 1% of America does love the Constitution so much that they will contribute. If I got 1 million people to actually contribute and just started parsing this up, we could more than fund what's necessary in getting constitutionalists in the state of Wyoming to actually start poking your state in the eye.
Yeah.
And so this is why this is, when we start realizing how effective we can be, because George Soros knows his billions of dollars have been very effective in buying American government. All we have to do is bring a little bit of money to the table, and then we can start taking charge, and actually we can take command of the narrative and so forth. So in the state, now one of the things that you kind of had to deal with in this last year was this Second Amendment, I'll call it, legislation that really wasn't supporting the Second Amendment. Can you give us some details? Because this goes to speaking to, you know, how the rhinos or how this pseudo-conservative, this pseudo-Republican, you know, legislature can actually get away with or almost get away with doing some really bad things.
Oh, absolutely. So this last session, we had the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which was, we called the Good SAPA Bill. And then that's the one that actually would protect the people's Second Amendment rights against the federal government and anyone that would come in and try and take away the people's Second Amendment rights. Then we had the Second Amendment Protection Act. So they just took the SAPA Bill and just changed one word. So what it did is it took existing statute and it kind of reworded some stuff, but it didn't protect people from the feds. So if the ATF were to come in to Wyoming and use federal dollars, it wouldn't protect people from that. So the ATF could come in and recruit and take city cops or the sheriff's deputies and say, you're now part of the ATF. And they could come in and confiscate guns. It didn't. That bill did not protect the people from that, but the Good SAPA Bill did, and that was the whole point. And we brought that up time and time and time again.
Right. Now,
and that was the biggest thing that we tried to hit home, but they were not hearing it. So all it did in there was say from state appropriations. It didn't say anything about federal appropriations. And that was the biggest thing, is the Biden administration, those are the people that we're trying to protect Wyoming residents against.
Right.
And they left the door wide open.
And so let me ask or inject this, because as I understand it, you got the Republican Party, which I think, right, the Republican Party was, I don't know if they were neutral or if they actually kind of supported this position of the SAPA 2, whatever. I don't think that they necessarily got blood on their hands, but I do believe that there was either a Liberty or a Freedom Caucus and those and other activist groups that actually did have blood on their hands, because they were telling people, they were misleading people and telling them that this bill was actually a good bill when it wasn't.
Right. Because what they were saying is, hey, this is a step forward in the right direction. And when in reality, what this does is this, when it comes to people's Second Amendment rights, you have to get it right. Otherwise, it leaves the door open for rhinos and Democrats to insert bad legislation, which will turn that good gun bill or so-so gun bill into gun control. And that's the bad part. So you got to do right the first time. Otherwise, it'll turn bad very, very quickly.
One other thing, and this is kind of a change on the topic, but I think this is really important. I want to highlight this, because if you are electing somebody in the state of Wyoming, the legal obligation for public service is a much higher bar than it is anywhere else in this republic, in the union. And that is because when you take an oath to office, Senator James, do you take an oath to support the Constitution, or do you take even a greater oath?
You take an oath to support and defend.
Support, defend, and obey, a much greater oath. In other words, they're legally bound to not just support the Constitution, they're now legally bound to support, defend, and obey the Constitution.
It's like a military.
Well, yeah, just like a U.S. citizen, to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, because that's the oath of a citizen. So when we place context to this, because there was this bill, HB 0132, that I know you were kind of aware of, but it originated in the House and it never made it to the Senate. But the fact of the matter is, every person that voted, every representative that voted against that bill, actually did, they violated their oath of office to support, defend, and obey the Constitution. Because what this bill would have done is it would have created a committee that would have reviewed to ensure that the Constitution was being complied to, ensuring every edict, everything that was coming from federal bureaucracies, from the court systems, from the President of the United States, if they were constitutional, even from Congress and Congress's acts, to ensure that they were all in compliance to the Constitution. And so when they voted against that to say we shouldn't check or verify, in other words, you know, we should just blindly have faith and trust in the government and not in the Constitution, they've turned their back on that legal oath and obligation. So it is our efforts this year in this election to ensure that every single person that voted no on that particular bill pays for that and actually does not get reelected. And we'd like to see that similar sentiment in sweeping into the Senate race as well, that if everybody understood this one bill and says, I'm committed to doing this, and if this person isn't, then they are guilty of right now telling you that they will perjure themselves and they will not fulfill their oath and their legal obligation as a public servant.
Yeah, that'd be good.
And so in so doing, what we want to do is we want to give you all of the weaponry to attack so that everybody in this coming election understands what's on the line. Our liberty and our Constitution is on the line. One of the things that we go through, and I go through all these different issues, but here's something that's not in the debates. Our monetary system is not in the debates, and I'm telling you, we're very close to being pushed into an electronic currency. And
yeah.
Anybody that understands the Constitution is clear. The federal government can only coin gold and silver for currency and regulate the value thereof. And states, if you read the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, it states right there that states can pass no law other than gold and coin as the legal payment of debt. No state has done this, but every state needs to do this because right now this fiat currency that Biden is printing, he has no ability to do that. And Nixon, when he took us off the gold standard, violated that. We're going to go back in 1933 in the bankruptcies and all of this stuff. But when we get back to the basics and we get states to stand up and say it has to be backed by gold and silver, this pushes us down the road of people starting to realize that we actually have protections in the Constitution to keep the federal government from doing this financial reset that they're warning us about, just like they're warning us about these food shortages. These are all, I can't emphasize this enough, these are all orchestrated attacks against our liberty, against our Constitution, and it's coming from our government at the state and the federal level. This is why we have to take back the constitutional positions in our state house, and then we can take back the constitutional positions at the federal level. Anyway, I'm sorry for ranting a little bit here, but obviously you can tell that I am here and I'm very passionate in supporting you and in supporting this movement that we need to get moving in Wyoming and many other red states. Anything that we can do at this point, I know I'd like to have you back, but anything other than what is your website?
I have Tom James for Wyoming. That's FOR.com.
Okay.
And then my nonprofit where I go around and I teach people about the Constitution and how to read and navigate the LSO website and everything about Wyoming politics is WyomingVoterEducation.com.
Okay. And do you have the ability for people to actually contribute?
Yes, you can find that on both of those websites.
Okay. And so those contributions probably go to PayPal or something like that?
It's actually the other donation website for
Okay, that's.
But there is a donation process through there. It's
right,
online.
That's fine. It's not a Cash App or anything that can be hacked.
Right? No.
Okay. All right. That's absolutely fine. So there is PayPal. I think there's Apple Pay. There's a lot of different institutions that have kind of created a third party, you know, medium. And there's some people that use PayPal or exclusively use this or that.
WinRed.
Okay. That's fine. And so, folks, let's test this theory. Give $5. Give whatever you can and start putting some gas in Senator James' tank. I'd love to hear in the next couple of weeks or at the beginning of the real campaign in June that he's getting some help. Because everybody understands that Biden administration is trying to keep everybody from being on the road by raising the cost of gas and the availability of food products and services. So we have to actually start beginning to fight, and everybody needs to contribute. This is why I never ask you for any money. I don't sell anything. I ask you to constantly save your money for these times when we need it for these elections, and this is the time where I'm going to start begging, poking you in the eye, and what have you. But anyway... Senator James, I'm really thankful that you came on. I'd like to have you back. What I'd like to do is have other people come back. But more importantly, I'd like to have you come back maybe sometime in June or the end of June to kind of talk about, you know, whether you're getting some love from the people of the show as well as, you know, the tactics and some of the things that we'll be working with you on and how well they're working in using these frontal assaults on using the Constitution against these tyrants that want to actually oppress the people with that.
Yep.
Any saved rounds or issues that you want to bring up? Anything at all?
Right now it's, you know, the transparency and the fiscal responsibility that we run into is our biggest one of many issues. But yeah, those are some of the things that are preventing a lot of things from moving forward here. And okay. Yeah, it's a never ending fight, and any help would be very, very, very much appreciated. And so thank you very much for what you do and anyone that's willing to help. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And it's a humble honor to be able to serve this Republican any way I possibly can. Folks, with that, we'll be going right into break, and then we'll come right back, and I will be able to give you some more feedback for Feedback Friday. And so please stay tuned. We'll be right back after this. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so you can see why it's really, really important to get these people who are willing to get into the trenches and fight for your liberties, folks. That's why we need you. I mean, surely you trust yourself to getting in there and actually doing the good fight. Now, a lot of times I talk about, you know, upstream views and downstream views. if you really want to, I'll just say, put your leadership hat on, if you want to become a leader, you have to start looking at things with upstream views. You have to start looking at, you know, the symptoms of the problem, which is the downstream view, and actually say, what is causing this? You know, is it entitlement? No. 9 times out of 10, it's not entitlement. It goes into much deeper, you know, such as education, societal mores, the loss of spirituality, the fact that we've got a, you know, the federal government has its jackbooted thug, you know, its jackbooted heels as thugs on the necks of the people, and actually on the necks of the churches, in constraining them, telling them that they, you know, keep your Bibles out of our schools, you can't bring up Christ in our school. These types of things that are, they have no business creating laws like any of this stuff. So if you start looking upstream at what has been done to make such dramatic changes in the mores of America, you'll start actually understanding with better clarity why and how we got into this mess. So the only way to fix it is getting government out of the way. You got to understand that we did not have a theocracy in 1789 when they started exercising the first federal government. They may have had prayer. It was a, you know, I'll just say, I don't want to use the word secular. I want to use the word non-denominational, because they respected all of the different Christian faiths. Over time, we've become far more critical of the different faiths and so forth. I mean, there may have been some, I don't want to say animosity, but there was. To be honest, they had differences. And the fact that they put away or put aside their religious views, their economic views, these differences that these different, I'll say cultures, because many of the colonies had different cultures. The Puritans were definitely a different culture than the Carolinas. So just to be clear, what we have to do is we really need to start understanding that we have to be tolerant of all Christian faiths, and not just Christian faiths, but all faiths that embrace liberty. We cannot tolerate faiths that have no toleration towards liberty and people to choose for themselves. Now, I do have some Feedback Friday. And I really, again, this is why I started off this show with thanking everybody for listening, because I did get a good wave of comments. And you know what? You may not like the way I say something in one particular time, because when we start framing information, sometimes it takes a couple of different ways so that you kind of understand what I am talking about. I thought I was pretty clear when it came to abortion, that abortion is absolutely a repugnant sin. But is it the greatest sin? Is suicide the greatest sin? Is denying the spirit? What is the greatest sin, right? And so the fact of the matter is, the abortion is not, I don't want to say it's not the issue. There's a plethora of issues. It's only one of many. But it is not the only issue that we have to focus on. The only reason abortion has become what it has become is because the federal government overreached their jurisdiction and put their nose into this and drove this agenda into America. You want to get rid of abortion, you have to stand up and say the federal government has no authority over things not delegated in the Constitution. It's that simple. But when we start looking at sin, you know, the question is abort, you know, because it is a repugnant sin. But what about infanticide? Is infanticide equally repugnant? I mean, we're talking about killing your young. It's a selective killing of whether it be a fetus or, a baby within the womb or a baby that's come outside the womb. It's still killing life. Or what about just this need for fetal tissue harvesting? I mean, the fact that we're doing this and then commercializing it and benefiting it, like there is no soul. Come on, folks. When we start looking at some of the things that they're trying to do today that have already become a problem, do not believe that we're going down the path for honorable reasons, because many a times they would make an adjustment to something, and what they do to make that adjustment is they give it back to you so that they can create this huge stealing of it again and adding to it. What about the sexualizing of our children? How repugnant is that sin? What about live organ harvesting with political prisoners like what's going on in China? Now, every time I bring up China, we tend to have problems broadcasting. So I'm hoping that, you know, the episodes will kind of span out, but because, you know, we take this risk. I mean, they have active hackers bringing people down, and we've been affected. Red State Talk Radio, this particular show has been affected, because when I started really harping, when I had Lionheart on, talking about what was going on in China and going on in Vietnam, it was just, wow. I mean, I couldn't believe it, that they were actually, you know, shutting us down or denying our it's called denial of service, taking away our ability to connect to the servers and so forth. But the point of what I'm trying to bring into this Feedback Friday is that I get the fact that there is nothing redeeming about abortion. There is nothing redeeming about this sin. But it is not the only sin, and it's not necessarily the greatest sin. I think murder is one of those, but, you know, when it talks about, you know, the commandments and the greater sins, I believe that we have to just lump all sins in that category of bad. Let's quit trying to make gray. Let's just basically make this a black and white issue, or a right and wrong issue, if you happen to be wired where you become sensitive to the term black and white. I don't want to get politically correct. What I want to get is right. We have to get government out of the things that they have no business doing. The fact that they're controlling the mores by dictating in our education system what is religion and what isn't, when they're actually inculcating and indoctrinating our children into a godless secular religion. Isn't that just as equal of a sin? Doesn't that actually breaks down these barriers so that people, this is how we got to where we were. Remember, folks, this is an incremental process. It didn't happen. The legalization of abortion didn't happen at the turn of the 19th century or the 20th century. It happened almost at the 21st century. They had to move us along and change our mores and adapt or get our paradigms to adapt to what we would consider, what we would look at and consider, okay, you know, that's okay. We'll let government do that, like Social Security. They had to start injecting social engineering. And incrementally, this is where we are today. I can't stress enough the evils that we're seeing. As a matter of fact, abortion and infanticide are old world evils. These things existed and were equally repugnant in other generations and in other societies throughout the annals of the history of the world. But never before have we seen some of these evils, such as the actual sexualizing and changing the genders of our children. Nor have we seen the evils ever in the history of mankind to where live organ harvesting is done. The only reason these people are alive in these gulags, they probably call them something different in China, but they're actually doing this. And if they're doing it there, it will eventually become a practice worldwide. You become a political prisoner, your life is only worth the organs that they will harvest from you when somebody comes along and needs them. Now, what do they do with some of these old people that maybe, you know, they don't offer anything? Well, they probably don't keep you around, because there's got to be a return on the investment of feeding you and keeping you basically healthy enough so they can harvest those organs. folks, we are literally living in the world's most evil times ever conceived. I can't impress upon you enough that even though we may look at, you know, this one very particular sin, you may make this the greatest sin. I think if you look at the Ten Commandments, sins against our Creator, sins against God, are far more great. I mean, that's why it's the first commandment. You know, idolatry, those types of things. I mean, those types of things are absolutely, you know, abominable. But denying of the Spirit, denying of Christ. I mean, there are lots of different sins that, you know, we can easily just start lumping into, you know, this whole pile. The fact of the matter is when government is absolutely doing everything they can to remove the consequences of sin, then we actually have an evil government. And abortion is just one of those consequences of sin that they have successfully removed. STDs, a lot of these other things. So I hope this comes clear that it's not that I am pro-abortion. I am pro-choice, but I'm not pro-abortion. And what that means is I believe that people shouldn't necessarily... So I just be clear here, because I got to back up because I just said that word again. I believe that the people can choose what they want to do for their government at the local level. It is a state issue. It's not within the Constitution. And states can outlaw these practices. Absolutely. I truly believe that giving people the freedom of choice, but that doesn't mean that we're subsidizing, that doesn't mean we're paying. That means that regardless of what the consequences of what you have done has done, you have to bear the cost, you have to bear the price. And it's between you and the Lord in dealing with what those ultimate costs really are. I don't believe that the Lord wants us to force people into the waters of baptism. I don't believe that the design of compulsion and compelling people into doing things is a divine design. I believe that in itself is evil. And I'll just close there because, there are words, obviously, that kind of, you know, pique people's interest or kind of trigger them. But I appreciate your feedback and I appreciate your concern and I appreciate your love of life. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. Sometimes when you're trying to cover things with multiple perspectives so that people kind of see this from more than just one angle, it kind of can create, well, it's dangerous for some people because they have a hard time seeing anything from any other perspective than their own. I get that and I understand. Forgive me. Elon Musk, though, let's go back to Elon Musk. Many, many people are just putting this guy up on a pedestal. And every time you put somebody up on a pedestal, they instantly obtain this perceived power. Do not think that he is a good guy just because he's championing free speech. He is the guy that's bringing us Skylink, which is basically the Boren Project, which is basically the global monitoring system for Big Brother, where he's launching 42,000 satellites. I wish I had more time, folks. I want to rail on Elon Musk, but we can't. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.